3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Guy James Show. It's a pleasure to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We're going to try and have a informative an entertaining program for you this afternoon. I messed up the opening there. You know, you'd think the longer that you do this, the better you might get at it, but it's not necessarily the case in my case. Anyway, here we are coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. Good to be back with you. Crazy week last week, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. A lot of you already know about what went on last week at the conference. It was a pleasure to be there with Bob. I'll tell you that right now. Bob and I are birds of a feather. We get along very, very well, and we had a great time. I certainly enjoyed that, and hope you enjoyed our broadcast that we sent to you. I see we don't have a very full chat room right now. I hope everybody will call all their friends and have them get on it. We're going to have a good show for you today. I have a good guest coming up. I think at 3:30, and we're going to have David Weigel from the Washington Independent, and he's going to talk about this, how they got really caught with their pants down, Tom Tancredo and Pat Buchanan having this nasty racist on their staff while they're out talking about other people being racist. So we're going to have Dave Weigel on, and he broke this story, and it's a very, very interesting story, let me tell you. So we have that to look forward to. And, of course, a lot going on right now. There's going to be a huge fight coming up this week in Washington next week. I'll be talking about it for a while, I am sure. We have the health care fight going to take place, and it's going to be a dandy. It's going to be a real Donnybrook. And one thing I think a lot of people haven't figured out yet, and I'm sure most of the Democrats have figured it out by now. All my listeners certainly have figured it out well, because after all, you are the smartest audience in talk radio. There isn't any question about that. I've checked. Yeah, you didn't think I knew, but I know. Yes, I've checked. I've done the background checks, got all the IQ in and your SAT scores and all that. And it is now confirmed that the Guy James audience is, without question, the most intelligent audience in all of talk radio. So there you go. You didn't think I knew that, did you? I've been checking you out. One thing that I mentioned that all my audience has to know is we don't need one single Republican to pass this public option on the health care. Not a single Republican. Don't forget that. Don't forget that. If we don't get a public option, at least, we're not going to get single payer, I'm sure of that. But if we don't get a public option in all this, it's not going to be because of the Republicans. Absolutely not, because there's not a damn thing that they could do about it. You know, the thing is, we not only don't need any Republicans on the vote, but we can get a public option to become a reality even if 9 Senate Democrats and 39 House Democrats go the other way. This has got to be absolutely a slam dunk. There's no question about it. And the thing is, you know there's going to be some of the Democrats voting against that. I think we all know that right now, right? Oh, yes. We're going to have the Mary Landrews, and we're going to have the Blanche Lincoln. We're going to have the Patty Murrays. We're going to have a lot of people vote against it. I think we know that. Why? Because they're afraid. They may believe in it wholeheartedly, but they are politicians. And what comes first to any politician, what is first and foremost in the mind of almost, I don't want to say all, but almost all politicians, almost, what is first and foremost in their minds? Huh? That's right, getting reelected. And some of these people live in states that are fairly conservative, and if they vote for any kind of a public health care option, they're afraid, oh, the voters are turning against us. Those people that come over to my side, they'll vote against me. So that's what's first and foremost. And if this happens, we got to call every one of them out. We got to call them out. We've got to hold rallies against them. We've got to line up primary challengers against public option opponents that are Democrats. That's what we ought to be doing. But instead, what's happening? Democratic leaders are holding fundraisers for these people and pressuring some of their primary opponents to get out of the race. They're having dinners in their honor. Kind of makes you wonder how serious even those Democrats in favor of the public option are about change. Because after all, it is nothing but a big club there. That you know, right? They're all one happy family when it comes down to it. So, here's the deal. It is up to Democrats to pass public health care option so that it's open to all Americans who might not be eligible right now for Medicare or Medicaid or the S-CHIP. We don't need any Republicans to help us do that. It'd be nice if some of them were smart enough to come along, but they're not. They're going to say no to everything. I doubt if we get a single Republican on board on this. But you got your Democrats like your Ben Nelsons and your, makes me sick to say it, Arlen Specter and Evan Bayh and some other blue dogs. And the Democratic leadership, one Harry Reid, is not able to squeeze these people enough, to put enough pressure on them into passing something that even meets, that doesn't even meet the lowest bar of any kind of liberal progressive governance. If they can't do that, it's time for us to aim our activism not toward the Republican, but toward those Democrats who won't follow the wishes of the people that put them in office. Lots of Democrats last year won election simply because they weren't Republicans. I think we all know that. A lot of people had to hold their nose while voting last year. Lots of Democrats, and you need to know this, and you do know this, most of you do know this, lots of Democrats are absolutely in the pockets of the insurance companies. The people that represent them don't mean much to a lot of these people. So we have to be very vigilant and watch out and raise holy hell with any Democrat that goes against any kind of a public option for this health care, any of them. Which brings to mind something that I've been thinking a lot about. If the Democrats don't hold on to power right now, if they can't hold on to the power right now, then it's hopeless for them. And what I wonder is, are they possibly alienating themselves right now to the people that put him in office by catering to the corporations, the banks, the insurance companies. Doesn't look particularly nice to me right now. It seems like a lot of Democrats are definitely in bed with the banks and the insurance companies and the corporations. And if they stay that way, there will be a backlash. And you know what that backlash will be. They'll get thrown out of office, and the real corporatists will take over. And then where are we going to be? I sure hope most of them are smart enough to stay away to this of this trigger deal that they're trying to put forth. The trigger that the Republicans are putting forth, it's a trap. It's absolutely a trap. John Amato wrote a great article on it. He said the healthcare debate is heating up and a lot of unscrupulous tactics are being revealed. I'm sure you read about this, but if not, I want to highlight one of the many loopholes the healthcare insurance industry is counting on with the help of their bought-off friends to destroy the public option for healthcare. It's called the trigger. In every major legislative battle, there's a few critical moments that decide the fate of that legislation. And in healthcare reform, we've already seen two. The first was when President Obama insisted that we do healthcare reform this year. The second, when Senate Democrats had the guts to ignore Republican hysterics and decide that they would move health care in a way that required a simple majority instead of the 60 votes. And the third big moment is upon us. And the fate of whether or not we get real reform of the health care system accomplished will likely be decided over the next few days. And the moment I'm talking about is the debate of the so-called trigger mechanism for having a public option in health care insurance. Now, the insurance lobby has had multiple tactics for stopping the public option idea, which they despise because they know if regular folks have a choice to go to a public option, insurance companies won't have the same ability to treat their customers like garbage when they get sick. And the first tactic was just to try to kill the public option outright. And the good news is that they appear to have failed at that. And so this so-called trigger proposal is the second tactic. The idea is to write a trigger that will allow for a public option only under certain conditions, but write the legislation so that those conditions would never get met in the real world. It's a classic DC tactic, right up there with calling for a commission to study something. And Olympia Snow is carrying the insurance industry water on this trigger proposal. In other words, we'll let you have your public health option once these so-called conditions are met, and they know the conditions will never be met. And they're trying their damnedest to get that done. Would I be surprised if they did get it done? No, I really wouldn't. First, Ben Nelson said he was going to filibuster the public option, but now he says he will not. Healthcare. It's at the number one of people's minds right now in this political season, and there's always a lot of Canadians where I live, so I get a chance to talk about public health care to a great extent here where I live. A lot of Canadians here, and I wanted to tell you about some BS about Canadian health care, their national health care system. The myth is that taxes in Canada are extremely high, mostly because of national health care. In actuality, taxes are nearly equal on both sides of the border. Overall, Canada's taxes are slightly higher than those in the U.S., but Canadians are afforded a lot of benefits for their tax dollars. even beyond health care. They got tax credits and family allowance and cheaper higher education. So the end result is a wash. And at the end of the day, the average after-tax income of Canadian workers is equal to about 82% of their gross pay. 82%. In the United States, that average is 81.9%. So are taxes extremely high because of national health care in Canada? The answer is no. Another myth is that Canada's health care system is a cumbersome bureaucracy. It is not. Doorbell's ringing. It is not a cumbersome bureaucracy. 10% of Canada's GDP is spent on health care for 100% of the population. 10%. The U.S. spends 17% of its GDP, but 15% of its population has no coverage whatsoever, with millions of others having an inadequate coverage. In essence, the U.S. system is considerably more expensive than Canada's. Another myth is that Canada's government decides who gets health care and when they get it. In this country, I think we all know that private medical insurers and HMOs do make those decisions here in the United States. The only people in Canada that do so are the physicians, the people that ought to make those decisions. In Canada, the government has absolutely no say whatsoever in who gets care and how they get it. Medical decisions are left entirely up to doctors, just the way it ought to be. So it's a lot of BS about Canada, a lot of myths about their coverage, about their national health care coverage, about England's, the United Kingdom's, and also France's, and anybody had decent health care. The opponents, the for-profit insurance companies and health care providers, they're absolutely dead set against it. And the other thing we have to consider is, why does our health insurance cost so damn much in this country? Why? I found a nonpartisan McKinsey group study. It's called Accounting for the Cost of Healthcare in the United States. And the idea, as the title suggests, is to figure out in a rigorous and methodical way why we pay so much more than any other developed country. And to do this, this McKinsey constructed the estimated spending according to wealth index, which adjusts the spending for increases per capita earnings. Of course, you would expect that a country that makes more money would pay more for care, and you know that this creates kind of a clean baseline for comparisons. Using this metric, we overpay to the tune of $477 billion a year in this country. That's $1,645 for every man, woman, and child. The question is why? And the short answer is that we pay more for units of care. McKinsey estimates that it is not higher disease prevalence in this country that causes health care to be so high. Differences in health account for only about $25 billion of the variation, and that's a drop in the bucket of the whole thing. The difference really is that we pay higher doctor salaries, higher drug costs, higher operation costs. We pay more per day in the hospital, and on and on and on. And the thing is, the whole thing in a nutshell is, we're getting a terrible deal for our medical dollar here in this country. You take drugs. Well, a lot of people take drugs, but take drugs. The report finds that we overpay for prescription drugs by $66 billion. And if you compare brand name drugs in the U.S. and Canada, the same drug is going to cost you 60% more here in this country as opposed to Canada. And if you restrict that to the top selling drugs, you find we pay 230% more than anyone else. And for generics, the difference evaporates. So on average, we overpay by 60 to 70% for the pharmaceuticals, largely because we don't bargain down the cost just like every other country does. And in essence, we're subsidizing the low drug costs for the rest of the world. If we demanded the discounts as well, other countries would have to pay a bit more, but we'd pay it one hell of a lot less. And this is, of course, just what the administrations have been trying to prevent in their fight against allowing Medicare to bargain down prices. That's what the Bush administration did all along. They fought against allowing Medicare to bargain down the prices. We're trying to change that. And doctors' compensations are also problematic. We overpay here by $58 billion. In other countries, specialists make four times the average salary. In America, they make 6.6 times. And then again, the profit. That adds on another $75 billion in cost. Another $147 billion in increased spending. Much of it is a consequence of the fee-for-service system, wherein doctors are paid based on how many procedures they recommend and carry out. And, of course, there's administration, where we pay $98 billion more than anybody else. $98 billion. $84 billion of it in the oh-so-efficient private sector. So there's a lot of ways that we can save money on our health care. There is no reason it has to cost as much as it does. We're overpaying for services. We're overpaying for hospital stays. We're overpaying for drugs. We're overpaying for physicians. We're overpaying for profits. And we're overpaying for administration. You tell me why, with taking all of this into account, why we can't have some sort of a public health option in this country. Because we can afford it. We can afford it. People on the right would have you think we're going down some bottomless pit, that we are going into something we just won't be able to afford. Of course we can afford it. It's a matter of competing against the private health care people, the insurance companies. That's why they dread this. That's why they're fighting so hard against this. They don't want anything to do with competition. The last thing in the world the private health care system in this country wants is any competition whatsoever. Because they know they've been screwing the American public big time. And they know that if they have to compete against another system, they're going to lose. And you know, I don't care if they lose. I don't care if they lose. We're going to have David Weigel from the Washington Independent coming up pretty soon. We're going to be talking about the hypocrisy of Pat Buchanan and Babe Buchanan. And isn't it something? I noticed the other day that Babe Buchanan, the sister of Pat Buchanan, loathsome woman that she is, she's, she used to be the treasurer of the United States, I believe. Post once held by the wonderful lady we had on a couple of weeks ago, Mary Ellen Withrow, family member. But Baby Cannon has used, she's just one of those people that lives inside the Beltway that's never going to go away. She's sucked at the political teat all of her life, practically. And once she got a taste of campaigns and campaign money, and she's on this board and that board and this PAC, and I don't know how many different boards of the right-wing radical groups, it fascinates me how these right-wingers, when they get thrown out of office or taken out of office, they've always got a job in one of the right-wing think tanks or PACs. What's his name? Ken Blackwell from Ohio. He gets thrown out of office in Ohio. What does he do? He ends up with a fat job in Washington, D.C. with the think tank. That's how it goes. They just keep recycling. And I'm not saying the Democrats don't do the same thing. They do. They're just not as many of them. But they get these same people, the same people with the connections, like a Babe Buchanan, like a Ken Blackwell. And they recycle these same people over and over and over again. That's why we have the problem in Washington that we have. And I heard somebody say the other day, one of our public officials say, you know, once you're in Washington, D.C. Because once you've held office, for example, you'd have to be a complete fool to be in the United States Senate, leave the Senate, or leave the House, and not be able to get $1 million a year job afterwards, a lobbying job. You'd have to be a complete idiot not to be able to pull down $1 million a year in lobbying fees if you once held office in this country, in the House or the United States Senate. Sad, but true. So we've got a small group of people, this family inside the Beltway that run it. The people on K Street, the former politicians that do all the lobbying. It's a small group. And first and foremost, and again, I don't want to say this about all of them, but first and foremost on their mind is self-preservation. Making money for my friends so that I can stay in power, so that I can get reelected, so I can help them keep making money, so I can help the insurance companies keep the nice little thing going that they've had going for how long now, and they'll keep me in office, which I like. We've got Republicans and Democrats doing that willy-nilly. It's not a one-party thing. So as I mentioned early on in the program today, any Democrat, I mean any Democrat, that votes against the public option for health care in this country, we've got to go after them just as hard as we would go after any Republican in office. We've got to get another candidate running. We've got to get somebody in the primary run against them, and we've got to beat on them. We've got to beat on them just as hard as we beat on a Republican opponent, because they, even though they got a D behind their names, if they vote against a public option, they are the enemy. I'm as partisan as the next person, maybe more so. But if there's somebody in my party that does not agree and does not vote for the principles that this Democratic Party stands for the people that put them in office, then they can go to hell. They can all be voted out, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. I stand on that strongly enough that they all have to go. That's what I want to say. We're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Do not go away. We got a great interview coming up.
Center for Independent Media. If you know your party's extension, please dial it now. To access the staff directory, please press the pound key. To reach the front desk, press 0.
And we're
one moment, please.
All right, we're in the middle of our call. Get David Wagle on with us.
Center for Independent Media, this is Kim.
Yes, I'm calling for David. He's
Which one?
David Wagle. He's got a spot on a radio show right now, actually.
Oh, goodness, hold on just one moment.
All right. Well, I called the extension. I guess it just didn't go through. Anyway, we'll have this ready to go here in just a moment. One, two, three.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hey.
Guy James from the Guy James Show.
All right. When do we start?
Right now. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. We have with us right now David Wagle from the Washington Independent and a prolific writer in Washington, D.C. David, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And am I saying it right, Wagle?
Wagle's correct, yeah.
Okay. Got lots of Wagles back where I'm from, so I thought I had it fairly right. You have reported a very important story that I hope is getting enough press, but from what I've seen, it is not. And that's what we wanted to talk to you today, basically about hypocrisy, the hypocrisy of Pat Buchanan and Tom Tancredo. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? How did you come by this story, and what piqued your interest in it?
Well, I had known for 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, a fellow named Marcus Epstein, who is a young guy who graduated from college 3 years ago, a half Korean and half Jewish political activist, who from college onward was involved in the more extreme nativist Lou Dobbs sort of conservative movement. Actually, I think the first I saw him was on a panel about immigration where he was making the case for stopping all immigration, not just legal, but all immigration, back in 2006. Now, he was hired right out of college by the American Cause, which is a group officially headed by Pat Buchanan, day-to-day headed by Babe Buchanan, his sister, and was working on immigration issues for them. He, in 2007, started working for Tom Tancredo, who was running for president, ran until right before the Iowa caucus when he dropped out and endorsed Mitt Romney, and Buchanan started working for Romney as well. And throughout this time, Epstein worked for them, but in July 2007, he, how can I encapsulate this? I mean, it's an ugly little story. He had too much to drink.
It's quite a story, though.
Well, he had too much to drink, and everyone around him says he had a drinking problem. He was walking around Georgetown, which is the tonier, wealthier part of Washington, D.C., yelling racial epithets, and he bumped into a black woman and yelled a racial epithet and hit her in the face and tried to flee the scene, but got picked up, actually, because a off-duty Secret Service agent was watching. So he...
of all the luck.
He pled guilty to this and went into rehab, but no one who employed him ever acknowledged that this had happened. He kept on working for the Buchanans and for Tom Tancredo. And the hypocrisy, I think, begins the last 2 weeks. I think that's the reason why there was actually a group called the One People's Project that had discovered his guilty plea. They passed it on to me. Hypocrisy was because Buchanan and Tancredo both were out in public, Buchanan still is, saying that Sonia Sotomayor, the nominee for the Supreme Court seat, is a racist, using that word in particular, all the while they employed and defended employing somebody who actually was convicted of yelling racist things. And, I mean, I can go into more of his background, but because there's actually a long bright line of racism all around the people involved in the Buchanan Tancredo movement.
Well, so it appears, and are you telling us? You know, a lot of us we have to go out and get a job. We have background checks and all this, and this news Are we to believe, actually, that this news never made, of this arrest and conviction of this crime actually didn't make it to the Tancredo and Buchanan people?
No, they knew about it. I talked to Babe Buchanan on last Monday, and we asked her about this timeline, and she immediately knew it, and they gave him not a pass, but they bought his side that he was drunk and that he had problems, and they kept working with him as he dealt with all this, went to AA meetings, got a medicine for bipolar disorder. So they knew about it. They chose not to ever discuss it or reveal it to anyone. And their argument throughout this whole week of stories was, well, he did this one thing, and don't you people believe in forgiveness? Babe Buchanan actually had a column for Human Events, and once again, the irony here, like her previous column for Human Events was about was called "Obama Nominates a Bigot for the High Court." Her last column was about how the bloggers have, you know, I have a blog, but I did this through reporting, how bloggers had lynched this guy who didn't deserve it. And again, that ignores the years of white nationalist anti-immigration writing that he'd done. All of it while working for these people. And if you poke around, I mean, if you go to his website, he doesn't conceal this. He has articles about how we shouldn't celebrate Martin Luther King Day because he was a bigamous communist, and how it's time to, you know, kick this man out of the country. He's got a one thing that someone else found. My friend Brian Boitler of Talking Points Memo noticed his Facebook page, and he had a Facebook album of his trip to Ethiopia, which included just strange racist captions for all these photos. And an example of there's a picture of a baboon, and he says he's looking at the local culture. And there's a picture of a monument to the Italian invasion of Ethiopia, and he has a Italian motto at the bottom of the page. The other one was a rug, the Ethiopian woven rug, and he says it's like what they say about the talking dog. It's not that it's not about what it says, but it's impressive it can talk at all. So he was out and out, doing out and out bigoted things for a very long time, and they just let him get away with everything. Two, pretend it's just a one slip, and it shouldn't affect their advocacy against Sonia Sotomayor or their accusations of Democratic racism.
Well, it's the old story, I guess, of whose ox is getting gored here. It doesn't surprise me at all, from knowing about Tancredo's feelings and that he's expressed, and Pat Buchanan's what he has said over the years. It doesn't surprise me that these people would overlook that. But what does surprise me is that they were able to get away with it for so long, and to think that the public wouldn't eventually find this out. Are things that quieted down, that hushed up in Washington, D.C., that they're able to contain this kind of stuff normally?
Well, this is a very particular aspect of D.C. that usually gets swept under the carpet because the media has a strange relationship with Pat Buchanan. With Tancredo, it's not strange. He just is seen as a kind of funny clown. With Buchanan, it's that he's this wise old man who knows everything about politics, and the fact that he executed the Southern Strategy with Richard Nixon, the fact that the bizarre bigotry of his various runs for president, they let him get away with all of that. So the presence of these, I mean, white supremacist is a loaded word, but that's sort of accurate. The presence of these guys around him, no one really cares, and there's actually Epstein founded a group called the Robert Taft Club, which held events that brought together, you know, far-right racist European political leaders with American intellectuals and writers for National Review. Ron Paul gave a speech at one of their events. Everyone just kind of let the guy get away with it because he was seen as kind of harmless. You know, his brand of bigotry was seen, I think, correctly as just acting out. I mean, he was a young guy who was led along by these powerful people that he'd read and respected. You know, he would have been nothing if he had to just go to law school like everyone else, but instead he, by acting out and saying all these crazy offensive things and doing all these crazy offensive things, he got a little bit of, you know, of power and influence. So he kept doing it. And people get letting it away with it because, you know, who cares if some guy is running around town saying wacky things. I mean, the media brings on Pat Buchanan all the time. It brings on today another conservative pundit, Frank Gaffney, who runs runs the Center for Security Policy, and around D.C. is able to corral big names to oppose Obama nominees to put the convention together, and, you know, he's said both that he wonders if the president was not born in Africa, and that he today says that the Cairo speech by Obama using some phrases indicated he might be a closet Muslim. So then, again, everyone in D.C. just lets the guy get away with that. There's a real tolerance. There's not so much tolerance for, you know, giving a speech and saying you're proud of being a Latina. There's a lot of tolerance for just wallowing in white supremacy and bigotry and controversial things that are politically incorrect.
Tell us, Dave, you live in that culture, and you know, I love the city. I was just in your town last week for a conference. I love the city, but so many times I don't love what goes on inside the Beltway. It looks like one thing and acts like another. How is it that these people like a Ken Blackwell, a Babe Buchanan, a Frank Gaffney, they just keep getting recycled over and over and over again and keep their positions and keep the power they have, stay on different boards, belong to different think tanks? How does that happen?
I almost want to credit just politeness. It's unless they leave the city, unless they voluntarily want to get out of Dodge, they will be around, and they'll be going to the parties you're going to. They'll be somebody will be seeking out their counsel. I mean, one factor is there's no small degree of congressmen of very modest or human expertise who will seek them out on these things, and they're able to get funding, especially if they're conservative. They're able to get funding from the small number of multimillionaires or big businesses that don't really take a huge hit from pouring a little bit of capital into some group that makes them look like they've got a intellectual aspect to what they're doing. So there's sort of a permanent offensive, what do you even call it, like a salon in D.C., and you can't really get kicked out of it. The closest you get is getting indicted, getting convicted of a crime, and moving out of the city, like Congressman Bob Ney, like Jack Abramoff. Even then, I don't think they're going to be invited on board soon, but people they were connected to were ousted from the Cato Institute and these other think tanks, and they're all kind of back. I mean, some of this is just actually, I think, the human nature of people in the city. Yeah, I'll say that much. I mean, you see a guy around all the time. It's harder to shun somebody than it is to just say, well, okay, we'll give him a pass, and I'll talk to the guy.
Well, David, let me tell you something. You mentioned a name. I think my audience already knows the story, but you mentioned a name, Bob Ney.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Ney was more or less ridden out of town on a rail because he had to go to jail because he was in the Jack Abramoff scandal up to his ears, and we all know that, and he went to prison, got out of prison, and maybe you know this story. You know what Bob Ney's doing now?
He has a radio show.
He's got a radio show, and he attended a conference last weekend that was full of almost nothing but liberal folks. Progressive people, Democratic mostly, and there's Bob Ney. And you know what? His story is that he's had an epiphany now. But he got that job through his connections in Washington, D.C., that just didn't want old poor old Bobby to go away and not to have a job anymore, even after he was convicted of all he was convicted. So that's another perfect case of just what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's I'd say again, I think it's fairly human. It's really tough to maintain a moral outrage about people if they're going to hang around, they're going to if they have anything likable about them or anything insight, any sort of insider history. The other thing is they can trade off their experience, and there can be people who are like May who can go a few miles off of the inside stories they have about Congress. Sometimes it's in the form of writing books, sometimes just in, you know, op-eds and interviews they do, things like that. So Buchanan's almost sui generis just because he has been at various points a disgraced figure, just a symbol of everything there is to everything wrong with conservatism. And you know, William F. Buckley ran him out of the conservative movement in a National Review cover story a decade and a half ago, a bit longer actually, accusing him of being an anti-Semite and a Holocaust skeptic and all these sorts of things. And it doesn't really take, because the guy tells jokes and can tell stories about Nixon that's the important thing, is they'll say things no one else can say. And there's a strange primacy put on that. If you can, you won't book the guest with the monotone voice who can explain something, but you will book the person who'll call a Supreme Court nominee a racist, for example, or accuse Bill Clinton of murdering someone. Now there are limits, but in general you get rewarded for being wackier. And
we've seen it over and over again. And his sister Bay, she's another one. She's been recycled how many times in Washington D.C.? She's on this PAC board and that PAC board, and she's on in one group after another, and over and over and over again. And even the money. I don't know how familiar you are with that story from Pat's last presidential campaign. She lived off of that for a long time. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I am not surprised by that, and it's just so normal here that you forget that it should be controversial. That's the way the city works. Again, I don't think this case it blew up in any sort of way until Buchanan and Tancredo went out of their way to accuse somebody of being a racist. And I don't know how much you watch Glenn Beck, for example, but he had a guest on a month ago who apparently in the commercial break said he was only doing this story about Acorn because he was a racist, and that kicked him off in a rage and went on some rant about how it's just not something you do and he doesn't have to stand for somebody calling him a racist. You know, this is a big deal to accuse somebody of being so biased that they can't be fair because they look at race first in all things, and they have some sort of enmity towards whites. And they go ahead and do that, and they seem to forget how much of this they forgive in their daily lives. They forgive people who actually are working to sow discord between the races and to change the immigration policy so it's less fair to immigrants. I mean, they expect to get a pass on all that, and they, at the same time, want to whine about anyone who says something that offends them. So once they start doing that, that's when this blew up. But at the same time, I think Tancredo is having trouble getting back on CNN, but Buchanan's been all over MSNBC since then.
Sure. It appears that probably, Tancredo is going to pay a price for it. It appears that Epstein's going to pay a bit of a price, isn't it? I guess the folks at the University of Virginia Law School aren't feeling too good about this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't know how I feel about that, because the story wasn't – Epstein's interesting. The story, though, isn't there's this guy. He deserves to be drummed out of the life he's leading. I mean, his plan, as I knew it, was to quit politics – to quit politics and go to law school, and I don't think that was going to happen. I mean, usually the way of these things is there's such a bug that you come back and help out in some way. I didn't see the utility of making this guy the fall guy for things. The fall guy should be Pat Buchanan and these people who want to poison the discourse and destroy reputations while getting away with manipulating these volunteers into promoting racism, more
sure.
or less.
And I should mention, for those that haven't seen the article, that Epstein was accepted and was going to go to the University of Virginia Law School, and they've now said that that he may not attend their law school. Is that still the case?
They haven't updated it since then. I used to have the ability to contact him. I haven't had it in a week, and he pulled down his Facebook page, so he's shut off. He's shut off from things. As of Friday, he was still not going there. And again, that was something that Dave Buchanan used to make the case that this was a huge witch hunt that unfairly took this guy's life apart. Which, no, but not a witch hunt, actually, a lynching. It was important that you use that word.
Well, then you would be the lyncher in this case, then, according to her.
Which is pretty funny. I mean, I've been to the fellow's house. I mean, my beat really is the conservative movement, so I cover it by talking to all these people, and I, 2008, you know, he had a barbecue at his house in McLean, which is also the neighborhood Buchanan lives, but that's where lots of kind of DC elites live, and saw his, copies of some extremist magazines and the Barack Obama pinata he had.
How do you get invited to something like that?
Just by knowing these people and being and using them as sources. I mean, once again, he was somebody that people tolerated because what was the threat of just a young, sort of foolish, full-time activist, part-time racist who, in the age of while the country was electing the first black president, and everything, like, how big a threat was this guy? So. There's a lot of tolerance to him. There's a lot of tolerance to Buchanan for the same reason.
Can you give us a little bit of your background and who you're writing for now and a little bit about the Washington Independent and all?
Right. Well, this story is, I think, I've written a few dozen since I joined in January. The Independent, which is a daily, updated multiple times a day web magazine that covers politics here. I think the best way of putting it is the motto, which is national news in context. There's not so much, look what this person said, here's a video of this terrible gaffe. There's a lot of putting news into context beyond the fuzz. And I came here from Reason Magazine, which is a 41-year-old now libertarian magazine. And I covered, actually, just because of the years that I was working there, I did a lot of covering the Ron Paul campaign and the Libertarian Party. Mm-hmm. So that's what gave me a background, some of these figures around the fringes of the conservative movement.
The Washington Independent, and we should give the website, it's washingtonindependent.com. I think all of our listeners will find this most interesting reading. I think you will. It's highly informative. It's a great website. I look at it every day, and I want to recommend it to the whole audience. That's WashingtonIndependent.com.
Right.
And so you haven't been with them all that long, right?
Since January,
right.
Yeah.
And you
I was trying to count in my head the stories. I mean, I file a couple pieces a week and a lot of blog posts about this universe of stories.
How much time and effort do you have to put into a story like this one, for example? You did a lot of work on this story.
This was only... I found out about the thing on Sunday, and then I spent Monday doing it, and the story went up Monday evening.
Yeah.
And that is, there are longer investigative pieces that take longer, but if something breaks, you chase the people you need around town and play phone tag with them and get as many as you can before the end of the day.
So
I mean, but we are constantly updating the blog with stuff like this, and I had updates all of Monday up to Friday about the other developments in the story.
Can you give us the blog, Addy, as well? The address of the blog.
Oh, it's at the site. It's just when you click on the Independent Streak. That's the name of the blog.
Right. Okay. Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. You've laid this all out for us very, very well. It was a great article you had on it, and that's why we gave you a call. Found out about it through our good friend Tom Engelhart. So it's at Tom Dispatch. So Thank you very much for being on the Guy James Show. I certainly appreciate it, and we'll get back in contact with you some of these days and see how this all washes out.
I appreciate that. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
All right, have a great day.
David Weigel of the Washington Independent. You will find that a very interesting reading. You will. They do a pretty good job on investigative things around Washington, D.C. And let's face it, there are a lot of things that need to be investigated in Washington. More than you can keep track of, I'm telling you. Many more than you can keep track of. It's amazing. It really is. I don't know how... I don't know how the town functions. I guess I do know how the town functions, and that's what makes me angry with it sometimes. Bob and I were standing on Pennsylvania Avenue the other night looking down toward the Capitol building, and that's, a magnificent sight. It's an awe-inspiring sight. It really is. And you see the Lincoln Memorial at night or in the day or any of the various memorials of World War II and the Iwo Jima and the White House and the Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial and all the wonderful things, the Korean and Vietnam. You see all these wonderful things. And you go into the House of Representatives and you set up in the gallery or to the Senate and set in the gallery or get to go in the Senate and House office buildings and meet with some senators and walk the halls of the place and you think of all the people that have been there. You think of your Daniel Websters that have been there and people of that type. You see it through those glasses. And they are rose-colored. And then you take off those glasses and you see the ugly side. And the ugly side is the story we just talked to you about just a moment ago. That's the ugly side. It's what goes on in that town sometimes that it just turns your stomach. You know what it's supposed to be like, and you know what it is. And there's a vast difference of how things should be in Washington and how things are. And there's a sleazy side to it that makes you want to throw up. A very sleazy side of it. And it is the people like a Pat Buchanan, and it is a man like a Tom Tancredo that actually had the audacity, both of them, to run for president of the United States, knowing that they harbor racist feelings in their hearts, and they could not be a president to all of the people. How could you run for the presidency of the United States and know in your heart, and know in your brain, your mind, and your heart that you could not be a president to all of the people because you harbored deep resentment and hatred for people of other races? How could you do that? And why would you do that? Well, the answer to the why is because I don't give a damn about all that stuff you just mentioned, Guy. I want to have the power in my hands. I want it for me. That's how people like that can do it. That's how. And it just makes you sick. It really does. So Tancredo and Pat Buchanan and Babe Buchanan calling Sonia Sotomayor a racist. That's as good a case of the pot calling the kettle black as that I think I've ever heard of. Maybe the best one I've ever heard of. So, we're going to pause for news right now at the top of the hour. Stay with us. We'll be back when the news is over, and we've got a lot more for you today.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has stopped the sale of Chrysler assets to Fiat with a temporary stay. Indiana pension funds are challenging the Chrysler-Fiat deal, claiming it's illegal. The Supreme Court is reviewing the appeal and did not say when it will rule on it. AFL-CIO Legislative Director Bill Samuel says Washington is moving quickly toward real action on health care reform to get it done this year.
I think health care really is going to happen this year. The president has put enormous effort and his prestige behind this, and there are five committees in Congress getting to work on it right now. As we speak, three House committees, two Senate committees. They're planning to mark up the bill and get it to the floor of the House and Senate, hopefully by the end of the July work period.
The reform is not likely to be the single-payer universal care as proposed in the Conyers House bill backed by hundreds of labor organizations. But Samuel says there will most likely be a public option plan alongside reforms in the private health care industry.
I do think there will be a public option, and this may be the fault line between the Democrats and Republicans in the Congress, but there are enough Democrats to pass this if no Republicans want to come along. I think there will be an effort made to make it bipartisan, but if no Republican will support the public option, my sense is that the president will insist on, and the Democrats in the Congress will give him that.
Workers at Quad City Die Casting are rallying Thursday in Chicago in the ongoing struggle to get Wells Fargo Bank to extend the credit needed to save the jobs at the plant. UE's Leah Freed says the fight to save these jobs is a community fight to get the bank to do what it's supposed to do to help the economy recover from the recession.
These people who work at Quad City Die Casting are committed to their jobs. They provide jobs in the community. They have mortgages with Wells Fargo and other banks. And so there's a ripple effect, a domino effect. It will create a great deal of damage in this community if these jobs aren't saved.
Wells Fargo got a $25 billion bailout from taxpayers, but it's cutting credit to Quad City Die Casting instead of making it more available. The United Electrical Workers Union says Quad City is fundamentally sound financially, but orders have dropped in the recession and credit from the bank is needed to save jobs. Despite unemployment of more than 9%, working families gave a record 73.4 million pounds of food in the National Association of Letter Carriers May Food Drive. The union collected food in more than 10,000 cities and towns in the nation's largest one-day effort to address hunger. National Association of Letter Carriers President William Young says it's amazing testimony to the generosity of the American people. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
There is a major discrepancy between the jobless rate of unemployed Caucasians and African Americans who hold bachelor degrees. College-educated Caucasians have only seen a 1.8% increase in the jobless rate between December 2007 and April 2009. For African Americans during that same time period, the unemployment rate jumped by a staggering 5%. College-educated Hispanics have only seen a 1% increase during that same time period.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Hear my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Hello.
have to fear him. Fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes. The truth. That's what we're after on this show. That's what we give you every day. You may not like what we say. You may not agree at all. But I always say the truth. Whatever's on my mind, I say it and I believe it. And I don't act anything out. I don't make anything up. I believe in my heart when I speak to you. That's what you get from me. I have to mention we were talking about health care at the start of the program today. And I want to update you very quickly. I hadn't planned on talking about this, so I'll make it very quick. I spoke to you a week ago, maybe last week as well, that I've got a friend that's had a wife, had his wife in the hospital. She's been in the hospital for 3.5 months now with an undiagnosed illness. Imagine that. 3.5 months undiagnosed in a major hospital. Imagine that. They have no insurance. They have no insurance. The bill is $2.2 million as of a couple of weeks ago. $2.2 million. These are young people. Young to me. They're like early 40-ish. They know that they'll never have anything the rest of their lives. They know that. Imagine that. How does a person pay for that? How does anybody pay for that? I don't know. Anyway, I saw another story that I felt I had to talk about today, and I don't want to. And my apologies that about talking about this, but I feel it's newsworthy and something that I have to talk about it. As for what Rush Limbaugh said yesterday, I've come to the realization that Limbaugh's listeners, along with those of, you know, the usual suspects, Hannity and Beck and O'Reilly and Levin and Lou Dobbs, as mentioned a little earlier in the program, and that stupid Mike Gallagher and Neil Bortz and who else? There's a list as long as your arm. Laura Ingraham, oh, Britt Hume, Pat Buchanan, Charles Krauthammer, and you got your G. Gordon Liddy, and you got your Ann Coulter, and many others who would stand and cheer the audience of these people, would absolutely stand and cheer all of these right-wing racists if they rode into Los Angeles Coliseum at night on horses with torches wearing their very finest pressed white sheets with their white hoods. And I've imagined this scene. Imagine the scene. 100,000 right-wingers. Or make it 1 million. Or however tens of millions that there are. Racist all. Holding torches. Chanting, "Rush, rush, rush." While Limbaugh takes the stage. Imagine another time, this kind of a stage I'm talking about, a stage surrounded by more torches and American flags everywhere and KKK flags flying in the breeze. Rush, rush, rush. With him standing there like he did, exhorting them with his flailing arms like he did at that recent convention in Washington, D.C. And then he gives the signal for them all to be quiet. And he starts his speech. filled with all the filthy invectives he's used over the years, leading the crowd in a verse of Brock the Magic Negro. And when it all ends, they gather around a huge 200-foot cross in the middle of the stadium floor, and they light it, while the crowd goes berserk, chanting, "Rush! Rush! Rush!" It would have everything but a lynching of a black man, and maybe a few Mexicans as well. But most likely some of the crowd that listened to these people would take care of that after they left the stadium. Certainly you don't think that a huge audience would gather and listen to any of the likes of these people, all of their listeners. You certainly don't think that there aren't a bunch of them in there that would do exactly that, do you? Am I accusing them of this? Absolutely. Are there among the hate-filled listeners of the Limbaughs and Hannitys and that whole crew that I just mentioned that wouldn't be proud to do that? Absolutely. There'd be a lot of pickup trucks in the parking lot with lots of rope in the back of them, and they could lynch the first black folks they see, or maybe follow the tradition. They could drag a few of them to their deaths behind their truck. Make no mistake about what is going on here with the Limbaughs and that whole group I just mentioned. This is not a ploy for ratings. That's not just what it is. This is not millions of listeners following the direction of these people. This is blind, evil hatred. This is pure racism. This is right-wing America, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. That's exactly what it is. That is the mindset of most of those people. These people are superior in their minds. These people have a sense of entitlement over any and all who are different in any way from white Christian America. They're the exceptionalist. And they do not accept President Obama because he is black. He is black. He is not them, and they hate him for it. The crowds, the throngs of people that listen to these clowns embody all of the racism and the hatred this nation has shown over the years toward those of color or different national origin. And you think that I'm overstating it? Do you think I'm saying it just to heighten your awareness of the racism in this country? No. I'm saying this because I believe it. I have seen it with my own eyes. I have heard it with my own ears. I live in America, and therefore I have seen the ugliness of racism. I have seen the white-only water fountains and restrooms. I have seen the National Guard in Birmingham, Alabama, in the streets because of ugly racial incidents. And as a young boy, I saw the signs at each end of the town of Sayersville, Kentucky, for example, that said, "Nigger, don't let the sun set on your head in this town." I've seen the fire hoses turned on black folks for peaceful marching for equality. And I've seen the dogs turned loose on them. And I've seen the images of black churches being burned and the graves of those who've had the courage to go south and march and who were murdered and buried in an embankment around the lake, killed for no other reason than because they stood for equal rights for fellow human beings. And let me tell you something that I'm ashamed to say. I believe that if Robert Kennedy hadn't gotten the federal government involved in investigating and prosecuting these crimes in the South, they would still be going on today. I absolutely believe that if there was not the fear of being caught and prosecuted, we would see massive racial killings in America. Racism is alive, and it is well in America. Don't even kid yourself about that. It brings me to tears to even speak of this. It makes me ashamed. But in my heart, I know it's true. And these hate mongers, these broadcasters like Limbaugh and his ilk are hurting my country, the country that I love. And they're leading this country backwards into a time when the Klan rode openly in the night, unafraid of any consequences or actions from those who might dare to oppose them. Do not suffer from any illusion that most folks voted against Barack Obama because they didn't go along with his political views. They voted against him because he isn't Lily White. I promised you that you would see more hatred toward Barack Obama than you've seen for any other president in our history, and my prediction is coming true. I see it every day. I hear it every day, and it is not going to end. Get used to that. It won't end if we end up with a great economy, if we end all the wars, and if we make America the envy of the world again. You will still see massive hatred toward Barack Obama. So no, I'm not surprised or shocked at any of the inflammatory rhetoric coming from the right, from the absolute leader of their party, Limbaugh, and his fellow hate mongers. He merely represents the thinking of tens of millions of Americans. Limbaugh's audience is frothing at the mouth with racial hatred. I know it. You know it. And you need to accept that we live in a country where racism is, in fact, alive and well. And there are millions of people that have no intent nor any desire to change that situation. It's like they're too stupid to know that they're insane, or they're too insane to know they're stupid. That's just how it is. Sadly, that is just how it is. When Limbaugh gets on the radio and utters these hateful comments, there are people all around this country in their automobiles and their offices and their homes saying, right on, Rush. Mega dittos, Rush. You're a great American, Hannity. Anybody that thinks that right-wing hate didn't get that Dr. Tiller killed last week, anybody really believe that? I don't. Well, there, I've said my piece about that today. But it's disappointing. It's more than disappointing. A lot more than disappointing. It really does sadden me. I got a great email from one of my listeners today, one of our devout listeners, Sophie. And I read it and read it and read it some more. And I agree with you, Sophie. The people running this country the people in charge, for the most part, not all, but for the most part, there aren't enough Dennis Kuciniches in this country. They're in a small club. They're in a club you and I don't belong to, and we never will belong to it. We're thrown a bone now and then, but hardly ever the meat. We get the bone after the politicians and their wealthy friends have eaten all the meat off of it. That is, after all, what it's all about. That's the ugly side of Washington, D.C. that I was talking about. The unseemly, the seedy, sleazy side of Washington, D.C., the deals that take place day in and day out in that town. the votes that are being bought as we speak. Right now. The votes that are being bought over the health care issue. Because of the massive amounts of money that's been spent by the private health care people and the insurance people. So easily bought. So often bought. Is it any wonder that the American people have become so cynical about politics in this country? Is it any wonder? I had several emails. I don't know why they waited until this week. I don't know why it came all of a sudden. I figured because of podcasts or something. People asking about the guest we had on recently about bankruptcy. And ask for the website and all. And for all of you that ask, and I am surprised about the numbers of you. Not that I'm surprised that numbers of you have problems, like so many of us do these days. But it's legalhelpers.com, legalhelpers.com, that is the website. And yes, Ben, I most definitely do remember Andy. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Yeah. Guess there's no one there. All right. Yes, Ben on the chat room asked if we remember Andy Stevenson and how he died because there was no health care for Americans. Andy was a wonderful human being. Lived out in the state of Washington. I think he lived in Washington. Didn't he, Ben? Yeah. But he was a friend to many of us. And he was a friend to the cause. And he died because he didn't get enough money for health care. Oh, yes, we took up a collection and gathered several thousand dollars to take care of Andy, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't near enough. He did die of cancer because he didn't have enough health care. We're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town. Oh, the small communities, and all my friends, it's a small town. My parents live in the same small town. My job is a small town, provides little opportunity. Educated in a small town, taught to fear Jesus in a small town. Used to daydream in that small town, another boring romantic, that's me. But I've seen it all in a small town, and myself all in a small town. There in an L.A. dollar
I come from. Can I forget the people who really love me? Well, I can be myself here in this small town. And people let me be just what I want to be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Against a big town, still hayseed enough to say, look who's in the big town. But my bed is in a small town, oh, and that's good enough for me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I can breathe in a small town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, and that's probably where they'll bury me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town. Oh, and that's just where I wanna be. Oh,
and we're back here on the Guy James Show. Welcome. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. I see we've got quite a nice crowd with us. Oh, I better turn off the music that's playing in the background here. We've got a caller on the line. I think it's Ben. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Hey there, Guy. Andy came up recently, in fact, just Saturday night in conversation.
Ben, explain to those who aren't in the chat room right now about Andy, okay?
Andy Stephenson was a election rights advocate. Originally, he was an associate of Bev Harris's Black Box Voting, and then he struck out on his own and did numerous seminars about electronic voting machines and what complete disasters they actually are, and I think events have proven him entirely correct. He was diagnosed, actually several times misdiagnosed, but eventually diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Now this is a problem because he did not have insurance. So we got together, the people in the online community, and raised over $50,000 for him, which wouldn't ordinarily have actually been enough for the surgery, but also several very kind people pulled strings and got major donors of Johns Hopkins to pull strings and got Johns Hopkins to agree to do that surgery for $50,000. And we got Andy in there and got the surgery. And unfortunately, by the time the surgery was done, the cancer had metastasized. It was in his lymph nodes, which they didn't know when they actually did the surgery. I only knew this after the biopsies. Moreover, it was not the sort of pancreatic cancer cell that they have good luck with, even with surgery done promptly. There are two types, and this was the type they can't do much with, where the survival is 0.01%. And Andy always believed he was going to pull through, and I think he believed he was going to pull through until the very last minute. I was on the phone with him 3 days before he died, and right after he had just had a stroke, that had deprived him of most of his vision. And he still thought he was going to pull through. But Saturday night, I was talking with another friend of mine. I'm good friends of the blues and rockabilly singer Candy Kane. And she was in town. Now, last year, April, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she didn't know how she was going to pay for her surgery. Fortunately, she lived in California. And fortunately, she still had one child who was under the age of 21. And because of that, she was able to get the state to pay for her surgery. Not everything involving her surgery. She still owes tens of thousands of dollars. But the surgery got done. And as a result of that, and as a result of the follow-on therapy, her pills every month cost her hundreds and hundreds of dollars. She's still with us. And she said that she had asked the social worker what would have become of her if she hadn't had a child under the age of 21. And she said, well, we usually refer those people to Medicaid, and most of the time they expire waiting for a response. And she said, expired, sort of like old milk. Yeah. You just throw them away. And that's what we've got in this country right now. We have a system where we actually care more for having fresh milk than having living human beings.
I think you're right, Ben. Sadly, you're right. There's a lot of horrible stories, and I'm flabbergasted when I think about it, when I think about the attitudes of many of the people who fight so hard against any form of health care, any form of public health care. They fight tooth and nail against it, and it's for money.
Yep.
And how you can be that way for money is not something I can I just can't process that. I can't. But I guess evidently enough people can.
Well, you know, there's a study recently out that almost every bankruptcy, you know, like the vast majority of bankruptcies, you know, like in the 80% range, are as a result of health issues.
Sure.
And I don't understand how it is that we can't appreciate in this country that if we didn't have all those bankruptcies from the health issues, we wouldn't have had to bail out all the banks.
Right you are.
Wouldn't have happened. Not only that, health care is the most labor-intensive thing left in the United States. If we were fully funding health care, there'd be a whole lot of jobs for people, and we're talking good jobs, paying jobs, reliable jobs, that would be created by the fact that everybody would be getting good quality health care.
Oh, Ben, I don't know what'll happen this week. Evidently, we're absolutely not going to have a single-payer system come through, but some kind of a public system, perhaps, if the Democrats can hold together. They don't even have to, as I mentioned earlier in the program, they don't even have to all hold together. We can lose 39 House members and 9 senators and still pull this off. But
we're
going
to pull this off, because if we don't pull this off, we make it, you know, remember, we've only got 17 months to the next senatorial election. We've only got 17 months to the next House election. And if we don't pull this off, we go for blood.
Yeah.
And we make that the number one issue. And if we do that, and if we get enough stories put together, compelling stories of people who didn't make it, people who were ruined by the system, people like Andy, and Andy would be proud to be used in that way.
Absolutely.
And I know this because he told me this. We put these together, and we make sure that every single living American has heard this, and we make sure that they understand that this is a right to life issue.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Well said, Ben.
And then we can get somewhere with it. It makes me angrier than I can tell you that we don't have good health care. I come from a place, Cook County, Illinois. If you live in Cook County, just if you're a resident of Cook County and you need medical care, you get it. Most people don't know this, but there is the Cook County hospital system, and it has been socialized health care since 1901.
Wow.
Now, you may have to wait in lines. You're not going to get your cosmetic surgery there, but they'll save your life, and they'll not send you the bill if you can't pay.
As it should be.
You know, and I can't see why we can't replicate something like Cook County Hospital in every major metropolitan area in this country and just have every county around there that's too small to have one feed into that system so that at the very least, at the very bottom, there's a safety net where people can go and get their cancer cut out and get their radiation and get their chemotherapy and get their broken limbs set. Because I think that if we're a nation that claims to be a Judeo-Christian nation, that claims to be actually a Judeo-Christian Muslim nation where we all come from the same book. Okay, we all come from the same darn Bible. If we're gonna claim that to people, then we need to start showing it. Because we have to start doing things for the very least of our brothers.
You're so right, Ben. I mean, I talk to people all the time from other countries. This is a vacation destination, and the Canadians, the French, the English, when we tell them about it, they look at you in disbelief many times. Disbelief.
Well, that's really all I had to say, other than to say that, you know, people should head over to candycane.com, CandyKane.com, and buy her new album.
All right.
You take care.
Thank you, Ben. Always good to hear from you, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Ben and I have been around the block together over the years. Yes, talking about some of our cyber friends we've had over the years. How many of you remember Jeff Nost from the old Democratic Underground? Used to go over there all the time, don't very much anymore. Not too much at all. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program. Let's see who we've got here. Hello, welcome to the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Monique.
Hi, Monique. Good to hear from
Mesa,
you.
Mesa, Arizona.
Mesa. All right.
And I have lots of stories to tell you about health insurance.
Well, there are many, aren't there?
Oh, my gosh. I was sitting here making a list, and I said, this is unbelievable, because the more I think about it, the bigger the list gets. But my daughter used to work at a hospital. And her thing was to go and collect money from the patients.
Oh.
And they had to sign this form. She had to go to the dying patients. And she said, I can't do that. They don't even know what they're signing. They can't even sign it. And they said, you know what they told her? Well, you sit there and wait for the family to come. Then the family can sign the paper.
Oh, boy. What a position.
And she had to quit. She said, every time I would pass the hospital, I would have an anxiety attack. I couldn't breathe because I just can't do that to people, Mom. When someone is dying, they're like vultures. They want that money. The insurance companies want that money.
That's a terrible position to be put in. My, oh, my, oh, my. I understand.
Yeah, so she did quit, but now she's having her own problems. She went to her doctor, because she was having pain in her pelvis. And so, they discovered that she was pregnant. They sent the bill to the insurance company, and the insurance company refused to pay it because that was a pre-existing condition because she had a problem there before.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Any excuse will do.
Oh, yeah, pre-existing. Well, then she called her doctor, and she said, can you write this up any other way? I can't afford this. I have insurance, but I still can't afford this. And so they are going to write it up. Now, I don't know what they will do.
And that's the case. That's the case so many times. People have insurance, and they still get broken down, you know?
Honestly. Oh, you know, I know so many seniors, because I am a senior, that are not getting their medications because they can't afford them. They don't take the medications they need.
Mm.
And they won't go, and, you know, I don't go to the doctor specifically because, so they tell me I have some horrible disease and I'm not going to leave a bill for my kids. Sorry.
Yeah.
They can, you know, I guess I'll conk out early, but no way am I going to have my kids pay a $50,000 bill.
Conked out. I haven't quite heard it put that way.
But they're responsible.
Yeah, that's true.
My kids don't have that much money to begin with, and they're young, and they're just beginning to have families.
Well, do you have hopes this week that they'll come up with a public option for the health care, or do you think the insurance companies will win this battle?
I think the insurance companies are going to win this battle.
I think it's entirely...
Sorry to say, because we have too many blue dogs.
Too many blue dogs, and whatever compromise they come to, yeah, here's what will happen. They'll water this down to be practically nothing and then get on TV and crow about how they've saved us all with the health care system. That's what they'll do.
Uh-huh. It is really scary. You know, when I grew up, my parents both had surgeries, and my father had a lot of, you know, very important surgeries, and they never had bills. When I had my kids and I had insurance at the time, I never paid a penny.
I had the right
insurance.
I have the same story to tell. That's true. You just didn't get insurance company. You paid for your insurance, or you worked for somebody that had it, and that was pretty much it.
Last weekend my daughter went to emergency. She had called her doctor because she was having a severe headache, and she didn't know if that was something going wrong with her pregnancy. And the doctor is very watchful of her because she does take thyroid medication, and that is kind of a scary thing when you're pregnant. And so she goes in there, and they said, well, we'll give you this pill. Then she worked in OB before, and so she knows the medications you can take and can't take. And she says, I can't take that because I am pregnant. And they said, well, okay, then. Well, lay down, we'll give you some morphine.
Oh.
And she said, what?
Morphine?
She said, did you hear what I just told you? I am pregnant. And the doctor got really angry and said, well, why did you come to emergency if you're not going to listen to what we're going to give you? And she got up and walked out, but she had to pay $100.
Lucky she got off with that.
Yeah. But, you know, this is crazy. Her mother-in-law had pancreatic cancer. Then they said, oh, no, she didn't have pancreatic cancer. Then they said, well, she'll have to go through chemo. Then the insurance company said, okay, but we'll only pay for one treatment.
Oh. My, oh, my. It's you know, you just hear them all day long. It's hard to hear these stories. It is, and yet we've all been there. We have.
And you know what? I think what the American people need to do is say, you know what? Our tax money pays for our senators and our congresspeople for their health care.
That's right.
Maybe we should need to have a huge group of us say, we're not paying our taxes anymore. You know, I'm really getting tired of this. We pay them, and they're being paid by the pharmaceuticals. They're being paid by the insurance company. Why should we pay a penny to them?
That's right. I absolutely agree. I do.
And I think when it comes down to election time, when they call me and ask for a donation, because I'm going to know how these people voted, I'm going to say, you voted against me? Not a penny from you. For you. I don't have the money. Sorry, guy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, person.
Yep.
I'm just not going to support these people anymore.
I'm not either. I think if they don't support us, I'm going to go after every one of them. I mean, in what little way I can, I will not accept this anymore. I will not.
Now, you know, this is not the only time that they're selling us out. They sold us out in everything.
That's right.
What's her name? Landrieu from...
Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's going against single payer.
Sure.
Well, we need some kind of compromise. Well, you know what? How many of us gave to Louisiana during the hurricanes?
That's right.
Oh, but she accepted that money. That was okay.
Well, she's in an area where if she does anything to help healthcare out, so a few people will vote against her, and that's all she's worried about. That's all she is worried about.
That's all they're worried about.
That's right. And if you've seen them in action in the halls and in their offices of the Senate office building in the Capitol, you'd understand a little bit of it anyway. They're treated like kings and queens, and they don't want to give that up. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think that there has to be some strong action against these people who vote.
Well, we're going to be staying on them. We will be staying on them. Monique, thanks so much. Thanks so much for your call. Yeah. Oh. Well, they get an earful. They're yeah. Well, thanks for calling, Monique. It's good to hear from you. Call us again. Bye now. That was Monique, and it's good to hear from her today. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, and we're going to pause for a break, if we can find the right buttons to push here, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes. Thank you.
impossible affair. And when someone else instead of me always seems to know the way, then I look at you and the world's all right with me. I just one look at you and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
A lovely day here in South Florida, let me tell you. Beautiful day. It is most of the time here. It really is. We have lots of great... I keep hearing noise in the background. There we go. Let's go ahead and give the Media Matters Minute for the day.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Fox News advanced the bogus allegation that President Obama is ignoring the threat of terrorism because he never once used the word terrorism in his speech in Cairo last week.
War on terror must be over. In fact, terrorism no longer a problem because the president never not once mentioned war on terror, terrorism, or terrorists. What's up with that?
In fact, although Obama did not actually use the word terrorism, he did discuss the issue of violent extremism at length. The only difference being a departure in terminology from the Bush administration. But the most outrageous comment of the day goes to conservative leader Rush Limbaugh discussing Supreme Court nominee Judge Sonia Sotomayor.
Sonia Sotomayor fracturing her ankle in an airport. I hope she can find a wise Latina doctor to set that ankle as opposed to an average white doctor.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
There you go, Ben Fischel and the Media Matters Minute. Thank you, Ben, for sending that. They do that every day, send us the Media Matters Minute, and we appreciate it. We had a chance to meet with the Media Matters folks in Washington last week and the people from Think Progress and just a whole bunch of our friends. It's always good to go to those events and get energized and just enjoy that part of it tremendously. See our good friend Tom Hartman and... did miss Peter B. there this year. Peter B. Collins was not there, and as you know, his show has been shut down. And I miss Peter B. He's a great guy. A lot of people miss Peter B. Collins. A lot of people miss a lot of liberal broadcasters that are gone by the wayside. We've spoken about that before because we haven't done a good enough job of keeping them on the air. That's it in a nutshell. A lot of people, and I don't have a lot of time to talk about this today, and maybe we will tomorrow, but, you know, a lot of people have been saying about the torture that we've been involved in with the detainees or prisoners or whatever you want to call them, illegal combatant, enemy combatants. Hey, they're prisoners. That's what they are, prisoners of war. I don't care what you want to call them. They're prisoners of war. And as you know, it was announced in North Korea that two American journalists, Laura Ling and Yuna Lee, were sentenced to 12 years of hard labor after being convicted of illegally entering North Korea and engaging in so-called hostile acts. Amnesty International criticized the legal procedures behind the sentencing and called for the journalist's immediate release. They had no access to lawyers, no due process, no transparency. The North Korean judicial and penal systems are more instruments of suppression than of justice, said Amnesty International's Asia-Pacific deputy director. And via Spencer Ackerman comes this U.S. State Department report on North Korean human rights. Said prolonged periods of exposure to the elements, humiliation such as public nakedness, confinement for up to several weeks in small punishment cells in which prisoners were unable to stand upright or lie down, being forced to kneel or sit immobilized for long periods, being hung by the wrist, being forced to stand up and sit down to the point of collapse. It's likely a lot of Americans read the story today of Laura Ling and Una Lee and were horrified at the injustice and the terrible fate these two young women face. And the point here is that it's equally likely that it won't occur to most of these folks that in light of U.S. detention and interrogation policies, the U.S. no longer has the moral authority to protest Lisa Ling and Una Lee's sentences. That is a sad, sad commentary. Terribly sad commentary. I know they didn't probably get a fair trial. I don't know what happened exactly. Supposedly they were across the North Korean border and didn't realize it. It might be true, it might not. I don't know. They were there working on a TV project for Al Gore. But got no fair trial, and now may very well be exposed to the same kind of torture that we have exposed people to in Guantanamo, Bagram. Abu Ghraib, and other places. So what do we do as a nation now? Do we speak as though we're outraged about this? Do we have any moral authority to say we're outraged about this? The rest of the world is going to turn a deaf ear to it. They're not going to feel bad that a couple of Americans are in a prison and being tortured after having no due process. They're going to say, America, look in the mirror. That's what's going to happen. I want to thank you for joining us on the program today. We are going to change the schedule next week a bit. We will still come on at 3 o'clock, but we're going to change the schedule up just a bit. So do stay tuned for that. I don't know whether Bob's going to be back tonight or not. He was in Charleston last I heard. And don't know whether he's going to be able to get back in time tonight to have a rerun or what. I just don't know what the answer is to that. So he'll find out. You all find out. But I've enjoyed being with you today, as always, and I do want to thank you for listening and want you to remember that, yes, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Thanks so much for joining us today. We will see you tomorrow. All right.